today, we're going to start off. Kinker's usually the one who runs the lead chair, so let me...
Welcome to Crossing Broadcast on a Thursday. A thirsty Thursday.
It's a big day. Sixers, they pick up a win against the Heat. They're moving on. They get to take on the New York Knicks. A better matchup, as we've said, for weeks and months, instead of the Boston Celtics. And your team, your town, your Philadelphia Phillies. A sweep. Some great pitching. I'm not going to sit here by myself. Nay, nay. I went out and got the best in the biz. John Marks is here. How you doing?
Who else is joining the show? You said the best in the biz.
It's Craig on the other side of the glass, on the ones and twos, making $380,000 a year. So Craig is
nice.
Well, all-time great, but...
Wearing my Bluey shirt today. I don't know if you...
Oh, okay. Did you watch The Sign?
So this is like the biggest thing ever in the world of if you're a parent with young children. The new Bluey episodes came out, and the episode where they're moving was very touching. I think it was more upsetting for the parents than it was for the kids. My kids were like, cool. And I'm like crying watching it. So
I'm gonna issue a spoiler alert here for like about 45 seconds to anybody who's watching this who is a parent. We're gonna have a spoiler here for The Sign, the 28-minute Bluey episode that just came out. John, there are a lot of times with Bluey where as a parent you go like, hey, this is good. This is like a good way to help the kids process whatever's going on in life, right? I'm not saying that you parent through TV shows. It's not exactly a great formula. But I saw, and I forget what it is, Ghost Basket or whatever it was, where they show the sign outside the house. And my kids went, oh, my God, they're selling their house. And I was like, oh, that makes sense why the big episode's called The Sign.
Right.
And when I went to watch it, I'm like, well, clearly they're going to move, right? Because this is a show that talks about, like, life and transition and all kinds of things. John, I have to tell you, if I were a parent who's preparing to move my family from one town to another, and I looked and I got all excited, like, oh, Bluey's here. Bluey's here to save the day. We're going to let these little Aussie cattle dogs tell my kid why it's okay that we're moving. And then the ending that actually happened, I'd have been livid. Absolutely livid.
Yeah, when they don't move. Yeah. I've often cried, and this is more about me crying very easily, cryable me. But I like sometimes the music just gets to me. It's a very sweet show, Bluey. It is.
Oh, yeah.
When you watch it with the kids, like, they're not affected by it, and I'm watering up and watching it. But yes, very emotional episode of Bluey.
We don't do a whole lot of TV in this house, but Bluey is like one of the shows that's gotten through that we're totally fine with here. But a lot of people cried at that. A lot of people cried last night when the Sixers began what some are now calling is fate. As fate would have it, the Sixers stock appears to be at an all-time high. Perfect time to say goodbye. When they come back like Jordan, we're in the forefront. Never mind. Little Jay-Z. Call me Joy-Z. Anyway, Sixers win last night. And I want to know, should people be excited? Because they're going to get the Knicks. They avoid the Celtics. And there is a path now, as we've talked about on the show for a while. Potentially, the Sixers could get the Knicks, followed by maybe the Pacers. Giannis is expected to miss the first two games, at least in that series.
Yeah.
If not, maybe you're getting a hobbled Giannis in the second round. And maybe sometime between now and then, somebody upends the Celtics, the dominant team in the East, arguably the most dominant team in the league. Should people be excited? Where is your Marksometer at right now?
Well, I talk myself every year. During the regular season, I'm a realist, and I say they every year in the playoffs, they falter, they fold, they come up small. Joel Embiid comes up small in big moments. And then as we get closer to the playoffs, I'll be like, well, oh, man, this feels different this year. Last year, I was saying the same thing. It feels different this year. It wasn't different this year or last year. Does it feel different this year? I don't know, Russ. I think the best point you have was it's matchups, right? If you're able to avoid the Celtics, if you're getting the Bucks with Giannis being hobbled, who knows if they're even winning their opening series, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, is there any doubt Doc Rivers is choking away a series if he's got to come through Philadelphia as the head coach of the Bucks, especially his record's under 500, I believe, still since he took over the Bucks? So, I mean, there's a lot of factors that should get you excited. Now, here's the reality of it as well. If Jimmy Butler doesn't tear his MCL or whatever happened last night, the Sixers may not win that game, right? Like the game kind of great comeback in the second half. It was the Batum game. I still don't know what the hell or how the hell that happened last night. But know, they got to play better basketball. And Tobias Harris was a zero. He threw up that air ball. I think that was pretty much the last that we saw of him in the game, or really that he was even out there all that much. But, you know, but it does – now the door's open. They're somehow favored against the Knicks in the series, which is kind of crazy to think that they're favored in the series. But, yeah, man, I'm back. I'm in. I've talked myself into it. 76ers, they have a chance. This might be the year. No one's expecting it. Just like the 2017 Eagles, right? No one expected anything that year. So, boom. But you do feel good. Thank God they won that game last night. 39 points at halftime, Russ. And I'm like stopping myself from tweeting and being negative and killing the team. And I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I mean, and there are some things to talk about with Tobias Harris, namely a potential burner that's been putting some pretty interesting things out there on Twitter. We'll get to that a little bit later. But, you know, you mentioned that Tobias Harris, we saw that air ball and then he was gone. He was DED dead for the rest of the game. And I actually want to throw this over to Nick Nurse for an explanation, because Nick Nurse, one of the things that people love about him is that he is a matchups guy and that he's got a better feel for the game. He's a better technical X's and O's tactical coach than Doc Rivers was. I want to get to his explanation of why he pulled Tobias Harris. We, as laymen, looked at it and said, because Tobias Harris sucks, is a fraud, and has been a leech for years here. But Nick Nurse actually came out with something, I guess some would say maybe a little bit more level-headed. Let's get to Nick Nurse.
In the fourth quarter, you took Tobias out, I think, put somebody else in. I think it was Kelly back in to finish the game out. Is that a conversation you've had with Tobias about, like, if things aren't going well down the stretch?
No, I thought Tobias was playing fine. I thought he played a ton of minutes. I thought he was absolutely tired. That was the only reason I made that switch. And I made the switch back to Kyle, to Buddy. I thought Buddy was playing great and gave us a spark too. But I just thought it was that time of the game where Kyle will usually make a play or two. And he did. He checked in, ran down a long rebound, very next possession, tap, steal, tap from behind. Like, just was going with what I thought we needed at the moment. And I thought Tobias had played his guts out for the entire game and just was on E a little bit.
Yeah, Tobias Harris played his guts out. I puke my guts out every time I watch him play. I mean, we're pretty much all the same here, right? Just a few million dollars difference there, John.
Yeah, I'm glad this is the finale of Tobias Harris as a 76er. It's been god-awful. It really, really has. And not that I haven't been officially out for a while, but this past offseason, when he was talking about more or less how fans don't really understand the game and he does all this different stuff or whatever, like, whatever. See ya. Now, let's just hope that he can improve his play a little bit in these series, because they really could use him. But, like, Nick Nurse has a couple different options now at a couple different positions where he's not going to leave Tobias in there just because he has nobody else to go to. They have a little bit of depth coming off the bench.
Yeah, and, like, the interesting thing, too, is, like, you know, you get to the options and, again, at some point, we'll get back to the Tobias Harris burner, alleged burner. Could it be? Could we have Burnergate 2.0 with the Sixers? But one of the guys that Nick Nurse rotated in is a guy who averaged like 5 points this year, a guy who like is not somebody who's really part of a significant part of the rotation where, like, when you think about shortening the bench for the playoffs, like, I don't think anybody had Nick Batum as a guy that was going to be leaned on in a critical moment. But Nick Batum had arguably the play of the game with a block. I mean, not only did he hit six threes in the game, but he gets this block that essentially seals the deal on Tyler Hero. And I'm going to throw it back. Let's get a little bit more audio on the show today, because he claims that Nick Nurse and the coaching staff had him ready for that play. And the reason that he executed it so well is because they told him it was coming. Let's go to Nick Batum in the Nick Batum game.
I mean, they showed me that play, like, coaches showed me that play in the video earlier in the community before, so.
Really?
We're expecting that play, like, for them to go around and catch it for you, go right and shoot it, like, right away. That's exactly the play they showed me, like, a week before. So I was expecting it.
So there you go. They showed it to him a week before. He knew it was coming. And it's like, what, 29 seconds left on the clock there. You're holding a 3-point lead. The ball's in Tyler Hero's hand. Tyler Hero went 9-for-27 from the field in the game. The guy that, I mean, look, if we're honest, like, Tyler Hero's a very good player. He's a good youngish player, but he's a guy that Miami didn't want to part with for Dame Lillard. Now, in fairness, Dame Lillard also doesn't look like Dame that we saw in Portland playing with Milwaukee now. No. But Hero's essentially been a guy that they've not been willing to move. The ball's in his hands. He has the chance to level the game. And Nick Batum, with easily the play of his Sixers career, probably the play of his career in at least like the last 7 or 8 years, right?
Yeah, what's your number two moment on Batum for
Well, there was the alley-oop he finished when he played for the... No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea either. But just saying.
Craig, with the good play here, the Nick Batum game last night.
I couldn't imagine anybody else came up with that. I tweeted it out before you did.
What time was... Netta, pull your tweet. Craig, find his tweet. What was my timestamp? 9:36. I did not see the John Marks tweet. I would have retweeted or quote-tweeted the John Marks tweet. I would not have gone to war with John Marks. I go to war with some people sometimes, but not John Marks.
You do?
Not a nice guy. Not a nice guy from the same area. Nah, absolutely not.
All right, let's see.
You know, unless there's reason to. I don't have a reason to right now, so we're fine.
I don't know if it's going to have the... 9:42, so you beat me to it.
Yeah, by six minutes.
Yeah, but you did it
so
before
I'd
the
like
game was
say,
over.
John Marks, he leveled a very serious critique.
You
a
did
very
it
serious
the
allegation.
Game was over. I didn't want to. I had to wait till the game was over. I would have jinxed it. This was before the game. I literally waited till the horn went and I tweeted it out. I will not be the reason this team loses. You should have to delete that. That's
no.
terrible.
Because you know what? I believed it in my heart of hearts. And like my Twitter bio says, it's not a hot take if it was the right take. And it was the right take. The Nick Batum game.
But think about
moment.
This. Think about this. They almost screwed that up at the end.
They did.
I mean, not that it would have given them a lot of time to get off the final shot, but still, like, how do you fuck that up? And they almost
was
did
it. Two and a half seconds left on the clock. A wide open three missed from the corner. Or no. Yes. No. It was a wide open three from the corner. On the inbound play... With point three, it was Embiid and
Maxey both went after the ball and it went out of bounds. It went out of bounds.
It went out of bounds when
the horn went off. But again, it wouldn't have given them a lot of time. They wouldn't have been able to take a shot. But still, they should have never gotten to that. Give me a heart attack.
Well, because and the thing too was that there was miscommunication between Maxey and Embiid, where the yes. ball they both reached for the ball, it goes out and it's 0.3 seconds. Was all that was left on the clock when the contact was made. Ball goes out. Miami obviously starts going absolutely apeshit that, like, right. this has to go to review. And then the announcers, you know, sometimes with the announcers, we worry that there's a little bit of anti-Philadelphia bias. But, you know, Mike Breen's saying, like, no, that what was it? Tony Brothers, I think, was the one who made the call. Said, like,
no, he waved it off. It's over.
This is done. He waved it off. It's over. Like, not even letting Miami fans have the moment of, like, oh, yeah, maybe we have a chance here. Maybe we're going to get another shot, but no.
But doesn't Breen, and I think Breen's great, doesn't he have to say, oh, we got to get a second look at this. That was close. At least make it a little bit more intriguing because I didn't know watching it real time. I had no idea. What's the one play you do there if you're the 76ers at the end? You chuck the ball down the court.
Yeah.
You throw 100%. A deep fly pattern to where – There's no chance you actually gave him a chance anyway.
Your obvious downside there is if you do throw it, it misses the player. And I think the Knicks had another timeout. They could have gotten a side out with 0.3 left. So you maybe do get set up in a more advantageous spot to hit the game winner, right? I don't know. I really don't know. It's over. Like, the main thing is, if you've been sticking with the Sixers for years, if you stuck through them for the process years, if you remember the Hollis Thompson and the Vander Blues and those guys.
Good old days, yeah.
You know, this is one of those times where you sit back and say, like, of course they had to make it hard. Of course we couldn't just have a nice, easy cap to the game. They legitimately try to screw themselves out of it with 0.3 seconds left in the game. But
good comeback, though.
It's a win. It's a win. Now, we look ahead to this matchup against the Knicks, and it's a former Nova guy, Kyle Lowry, against a former Nova guy, Jalen Brunson.
No, against Nova. I mean, the Knicks, like 60% of their starting five, at least at one point, was Villanova.
Maybe they'll get Mikal Bridges in the offseason. Who knows? Maybe Jay Wright. I've always said Jay Wright, if he's going to come out of quasi-retirement to go to the NBA, it's going to be the Knicks because he loves MSG. Boy, would that be something. Just imagine, they get Mikal Bridges, and they bring Jay Wright in to take that team to the next level.
There's always been the whispers, too, and if people don't remember this, Scott O'Neill used to work for MSG, he used to work for the Knicks, and they wanted to hire Jay Wright 15 years ago up in New York for the Knicks. I think he's done, but to your point, if there would have been two teams he would have coached, it would have been the Knicks or the 76ers, and I don't think he's going to now. But to your point with facing the Knicks – and listen, this is a winnable series. This isn't normally as a 7 seed you look at it and you say, like, all right, well, You know, like this, the Sixers aren't a typical seven seed, and the Knicks aren't a typical two seed, right? Like they are the new team on the block.
Yep.
That has become, and kind of, I'm not going to say they lucked out at the end of the regular season, but they're fortunate that the Bucks kind of faltered there and they became the number two seed. And I like the way they play. They're tough. I like their head coach, Thibodeau. When guys listen to him, he always gets great results. And that means they're playing low turnovers, and they're playing great defense. The Sixers, like Embiid, if Embiid's on, the Sixers win this series. Straight up.
Yeah.
They win this series.
But what percentage are you getting him at? Because he looks bad. I mean, it's one of those moments where, like, last night you look and you go, like, well, shit, he's probably, like, 50%. He looks mopey. He doesn't look like a guy who's fully engaged throughout that game, which is bad.
He was mopey.
I mean, these are...
when Butler had that steal in the first half where he came up and kind of picked his pocket, he was really mopey after that play when they went to timeout. But he's got to get over that hurdle, Russ.
It is a mental hurdle, and the physical hurdle's there too. Like the knee is going to be a problem. You have to fight through it. I saw somebody earlier today on Twitter say, like, oh, we're preparing for a generational run. And I said, what exactly does that mean? What is a generational run? They're like, oh, you're gonna just bowl over teams. I'm like, I don't know the fuck you're watching, but like here in reality where I like to exist, like, no, it's going to take everything you have. The good thing that you have, and this is where, like, I look at it and say, look, even if they don't have a deep playoff run, the guy I'm watching is Tyrese Maxey, because I want to see what Tyrese Maxey is going to be able to do against a legitimate killer in Jalen Brunson. Like, can he match him game for game? If Brunson goes for 30, can Maxey go for 35? If Brunson goes for 40, can Maxey get close? The Knicks have no one on the interior who can actually bang with Joel Embiid. The big issue, obviously, is the knee. Embiid is probably not going to want to bang on the block. And that's that, like, that, which could actually, in a sense, mitigate your big advantage going into the series.
Someone said Brunson and Maxey are a wash. Like, all right. I mean, close to a wash. I think it comes down to, like you had said, the physical hurdles with Embiid are clearly there. He's not 100%. And Embiid's always been like this. It's one thing if he has a torn ACL, he's not going to play through that. But he came back when he's like, all right, this is the amount of time I need to kind of get ready for the playoffs. So he is not 100%. To me, the bigger issue is the mental hurdle. It's not something this team and Joel Embiid has been able to get past. And you're hoping that they have the right guy in Nick Nurse that kind of gets them over this mental thing. Here's the good thing. Even though they're favored in the series, and maybe the Knicks try to use that as some type of a motivating factor, but the expectations aren't there for the Sixers. Us as fans, we can talk ourselves into, oh, they're going to beat the Knicks, and then they're going to get a matchup, they're going to beat the Bucks or whatever. Reality is that the expectation isn't there for the 76ers this year. So it doesn't mean they won't get crushed if they lose the series and if they come up small, but they got to get over this. They got to get over this hurdle. They have to start winning series that they could or should win. And that's what this is against the Knicks.
The most beautiful, poetic thing that could happen, obviously. Now, Butler, it looks like, tore his MCL. He's expected to be out. There's no way Miami's beating Boston in the first round without Jimmy Butler. I think they wouldn't have really had much of a chance anyway with him. But this whole thing could come down to next, you know, you get past the Knicks in what will probably be a long series no matter what. You advance, Giannis comes back, maybe they win that series in six games. The most poetic thing, obviously, is going to be Doc Rivers versus his replacement in Nick Nurse. And everybody seems to think Nick Nurse is this better X's and O coach than Doc Rivers. And, like, you'll actually get to see it. It'll be on display. And the one positive, I guess, if you have to play the Bucks, is presumably because it's a calf strain, Giannis isn't going to be full Giannis, Embiid's not going to be full Embiid. And then you get to see Tyrese Maxey against the guy you wouldn't trade him for, Damian Lillard. That is a fun series. If you're able to get past that, then it's Boston. And I don't think it matters who in the East ends up across from Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, Boston, despite the fact that they are notorious choke artists and that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have shown absolutely no ability to execute in the clutch, I don't see
the best team in the NBA.
Boston's
the best team in the NBA. Jrue Holiday stabilizes that roster. White has turned into an all-star player. He's really good. They're the best team in the East. So just kind of like with the Eagles when they were in 2017, when they had Carson Wentz, take it literally And you know I do this, Russ, as well. I never look ahead to other games or bigger series. But you literally have to just take it series by series, right? You can't worry about the Celtics. You can't worry about what's after this. But, yeah, my dream is Doc Rivers coming back to Philly for a series against the Sixers in the second round. That would be awesome.
It'd be pretty
great.
He would
so choke it. You know that he would choke the series.
100%. There's it's never been a doubt. I can't wait to find out what his excuse would be every loss they pick up in that series. Because as we know, Doc is a master of the excuses. Like maybe the smoothies won't be made with enough ice cubes or something, right?
So, can he blame Ben again? Bring Ben back?
It's entirely possible. Why not? All right. So the other team that I wanted to get to with you, I'll probably talk about the Flyers here a little bit at the end since their season is over, and I don't want to bore you to death with Flyers talk. But
and I don't think I could talk about them anyway.
It's fine.
Wouldn't make me look good.
Okay. But the Phillies are a team that I think we can all get excited about. You know, the one thing going into the season that I looked at, I still think it's going to be proven to be correct, is that they needed another starter at the top of the rotation. I don't want to say that Ranger Suarez and Christopher Sanchez right now are fool's gold. And I don't want to say the rotation as a whole is fool's gold right now. But there's a reason that John Middleton was willing to put more money on the table for Yamamoto. And I know that people say, well, short term, long term, his age, he fits the window. He's here for a long time. That's all fine. But I think that in his heart of hearts, John Middleton knows that Aaron Nola doesn't have it here. And he knows that Zach Wheeler isn't going to pitch for another 8 seasons, right?
Right.
I think that they know that there's probably an issue at the top. But they have been fantastic. Ranger Suarez, complete game shutout. Christopher Sanchez, fantastic effort last night. Has the pitching, despite the fact that the bats have been slow to wake up, they had a pretty good game last night. Bullpen kind of has some issues. Have the Phillies started, and you have a new show that now is your perfect time to plug, but yeah. But the Phillies, like, have they gotten you back in?
Yeah, Bet Parks, we call it Out of the Parks. PARX with John Marks. It's with Sam Stafford and Maniac Malloy. We do it every Wednesday. We do it live. It's available to be watched on YouTube whenever, just like Crossing Broadcast and everything else. And we talked about this yesterday. Do I think it's fool's gold? I don't think the Phillies starting rotation is fool's gold. However, to your point of what you were saying, and it was exactly what I was saying in spring training in the preseason before it started, was I think there's a couple different reasons why they pursued Yamamoto as hard as they did. A, they know they need another starting pitcher at the top of the rotation. And it's not just for right now, it's also moving forward, right? And I think the B part of it is he sizzle. Now you finally have a Japanese player that comes over with the upside of being a star, which sells at the box office. We haven't had this here in Philly. We really haven't. They've had no track record of attracting the international talents, at least from Japan. So it would have been something new. And I think that attracted the Phillies to him as well. But it was what I was saying was, it's not that they don't have a good five, because they have a good five. It looks like that to me, you have Wheeler and then you have 2 threes, you have a 4 and you have a 5. If you get in a playoff series, I don't like the Phillies against maybe some other teams that you would be facing. And really, it comes down to Aaron Nola, who's been good, and he's a good pitcher. I wouldn't have given him the years and the money that the Phillies gave him, but it's a matter of whether Ranger Suarez can develop into that second starter to where when you get into a playoff series, you feel like he's your true number two starter. Here's the other thing, and I don't want to – like, Zach Wheeler's been – he's been healthy his entire Phillies career, which he's never done before coming to Philadelphia. Like, at some point, the odds are that if he pitches 5 years, he's going to at least get nicked up one of the years, or he's going to have some problems, right? So, man, like, if he goes down, the rotation could be in some trouble as well. Tywon Walker's coming back, and you're going to have to make a decision. Yeah, well, that's the problem. He's making money. That almost gives him a spot in the rotation, which I don't want to see him back in the rotation. They don't have a choice. No. So, no. Yeah, well, I mean, like, but like, I think the rotation's good. It's one of the top rotations in baseball. It helped that they face some bad teams. Yeah, they have the White Sox coming up. Boy, White Sox are one of the worst teams in baseball. So,
yeah. I mean, Christopher Sanchez is an interesting guy so far, right? 2.53 ERA through 4 games, 21 innings pitched, 20 hits allowed, 6 earned runs. Not bad. If you remove the clunker that Nola threw at the beginning of the year, The Phillies rotation has a 2.14 ERA. Now, I always come back to, like, is something sustainable? Do any of us really believe that this Phillies staff is going to spend the entire season somewhere in that 2.14 ERA range? No. You would be absolutely out of your mind. Even with the clunker, it's a 2.54 ERA, right? My comparison, my cross-sport comparison of the day, is this is kind of what happened with goaltending with the Flyers to start the year. Part of the reason that the Flyers were so well positioned and were able to make a run like they were early in the season, which eventually set them up for the possibility of making the playoffs, is because Redacted and Sam Ersson played so well, Carter Hart, played so well early on in the season, played well above the level that they even had to that point in their respective careers, that it was kind of giving you this feeling that maybe things were going better and you're picking up points that you otherwise wouldn't have. I don't want people to get in their heads that, like, this is a sustainable thing. It's not. There's no chance. The good thing that you have is they put these numbers up while the bats, for the most part, have shit the bed in half the games this year. And you have to think that at some point, these guys who are getting paid big bucks are going to hit. Trey Turner has a home run last night. John, should people start doing the standing ovation again for Trey Turner until he's back?
I don't think we need to. We're good.
You don't think so? He's okay? Okay.
He's good. Hey, man. Like, he's had a good streak here with over the last week or so. Schwarbs had two home runs last night. I mean, is it sustainable? And I was just trying to do some Googling while you were talking. So I was curious to see where the Phillies starting pitching was last year as far as ERA. They have the best ERA before last night's game. They had the best ERA in the NL, and they had the third best in baseball. I know I was saying that yesterday. Do I think it's sustainable? Maybe not to the level that you're saying, but this is an above average rotation as far as when you look around baseball. Maybe you have better pitchers than Zach Wheeler, but do you have a better five? I mean, I don't watch as much Major League Baseball as I once did, but I know it's got to be one of the top rotations. So, you know, like, I'm trying to see the ERA right here. I'd be surprised if their starting pitching wasn't a top 10 starting pitching ERA last year. I think it's sustainable.
I have it here. So last year, across the entire season, the Phillies had the 12th best ERA at 4.03. The thing that maybe you want to take a look at from last year is their ERA in April. I'm going to keep out March because I don't think games in March actually matter.
But because I saw that. That's pitching in general. That's not starting pitching.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Let me see if I can parse this out.
But still, it's 12th. It's better than half, slightly better than half.
And just for comparison's sake, last year at this point in the season, so into April, the Phillies had the 15th best, if you want to call it best at that point, ERA in the majors last April. So I don't know. We can do a little bit of number crunching here. Maybe Craig can earn that $390,000 salary and find us some stats on the starters from last year. But, like, look, I still think that ultimately it's going to be an issue. I think the bullpen has been very up and down. They've had some really great stretches, and then they have games like last night where they can't hold a lead. They technically hold it, but, like, they made it very interesting, just like the Sixers did across the street. Is there anybody right now that you're concerned about? Let's go with a hitter. Who's the guy that you have your eye on right now that the Phillies need to get going in order for them to have a legitimate shot here of keeping at least relative pace with the Braves?
Yeah, I mean, I think Strider going down is the one thing where I was saying this prior to the season, that the Phillies aren't good enough to win the NL East. The Braves, if they have a little bit of a down year, win 95 games. The Phillies aren't winning 95 games, right? So I'm comfortable with the Phillies winning 88, 89 games, being a wild card. And then once you get to a playoff series, as we've learned in the last couple of years, it doesn't matter how many regular season wins you have. They're dangerous in the playoffs. But to answer your question, and honestly, like, to me, last year, if you remember how the season ended, games 1 and 2 in the NLCS, we were talking about history with the Phillies. Historic numbers. Nick Castellanos, historic numbers. Trey Turner. The offense was doing stuff that we hadn't seen the Braves series and then heading into the NLCS. And then an adjustment was made by the Diamondbacks. And the Phillies chased for the rest of the series, really. And everything blew up in their face. So I bring that up to bring up Nick Castellanos. When Nick Castellanos is right in the head, and this is such a mental thing with him, when he's right in the head, he's good, and he protects that lineup. Having that right-handed power bat is so important when you have a left, when you have a lefty power, like when your best hitters are your left-handed hitters, especially with Reese not being back, and I know he was gone last year, but Castellanos right now is in one of these funks. Did you see the ball that he swung at?
Yeah, where he checked, the one that he checked to swing a couple games checked, ago? Where it's checked, like 7 feet off the plate?
Do you know what he's doing? He's deciding he's swinging while the pitcher's in the stretch or winding up. He's literally at that point deciding whether he's swinging or not. Yep. So he has no plan coming up to the plate. He has no idea what he's doing. He's just up there saying, am I going to swing? Am I not going to swing? Am I going to swing? I'm not going to swing. That's how you swing it. That's how you almost swing at a ball at 7 feet outside.
Yeah.
So he comes out of it, though. So I don't what do you do? You talked about the standing ovation. What do we do with Nick Castellanos to get him out of the bad funk? Do we throw stuff at him? Do we yell at him? I'm not sure. I can't get in his head. He's one of the most interesting and bizarre athletes that I remember in this town for the last couple of years.
I mean, if you ask him, there's a lot of space in that head, right? Remember he didn't go to school. he hits baseballs. Well, what do you do if you don't hit baseballs, Nick?
You know what I mean?
Did you start going like for your MBA? You like going, yeah. You go in the virtual option. Is that what's throwing him off for a loop? Like, it's weird because like, I don't want to say somebody's dumb cause I don't know the guy. Right. But like, you don't get exactly the feelings of a Rhodes Scholar when you hear from Nick Castellanos. And I don't expect that from our athletes in this town. Right. But like, if you're getting paid to hit the ball and you're now in essentially what you just kind of outlined is a massive guessing game, then it's like, well, what are we doing here? You're getting paid far too much money. You've been successful in your career. It's not like he's Dom Brown, right, where you hold on to this guy as this treasured piece of your farm system, and then you bring him up, and it's not working, and there's like this added pressure to him of like, oh, the Phillies didn't want to trade you for Doc Halliday, right, for Doc all those years ago, right? Or like knowing that this team didn't want to – this team thinks that you're the five-tool player that they're going to build the franchise around for 10 years. It's not that. Castellanos was a good player before he got here. That's why they opened up the checkbook to, like, bring a right-hand bat into the fold. It's a shame because I think that there's that potential there for the fan base and this guy to connect. I don't think the fans have turned against him in the way that they have other players before, because I think that if we're being honest and if we're being fair, your average Philadelphia fan is going to like the guy who goes out and makes ball go boom instead of explaining to you why he's changed his launch angle, right? So, like, I don't know. I think that people identify better with him, so they've given him a little bit more rope. But at some point, you do have to ask the question, when is it time to flip the page? And I don't think it's now, and I don't think that there's going to be a taker for him in a way that you're going to be able to replace him with somebody better midseason. But
I don't think they can trade him. They were trying to move him in the offseason. And like a week went by after that initial story came out, and then it was another story of, oh, the Phillies don't want to move Castellanos. No, they love him. He's the right fielder. Yeah, because no one was interested in taking on that contract. He's streaky. So this is a long way around to say as far as who you're worried about. If Castellanos, if you're in a playoff series and Castellanos is an automatic out, you're in trouble. So you hope you're getting him during a time where everybody doesn't go ice cold at the same time. By the way, Rhys Hoskins was really streaky. He was streaky all the way back to his minor league days. I remember following him in the minors and looking at box scores every day. And he would be like, wow, he's hitting 320. And then you look 2 weeks later, he's hitting 260. So he didn't get a hit for 2 weeks. So these streaky guys make you crazy. And this Phillies team can be really streaky at times.
I did see some people getting really excited that Scott Kingery's had a good start. I guess he's had a good few weeks.
He hit his fourth home run last night, Russ.
As Buster Olney once said, there was that scout who said they'd compare him to Dustin Pedroia. I'm still waiting on that. Listen, I'm okay with delayed gratification, all right? Like if it all leads to something good, but I think we're almost out of time there. Speaking of almost out of time, I know that you've got a hard out here coming up. But before I guess we end the show, I like to talk about the media sometimes. This is one of my things. And I think the last time we spoke on the show, maybe, or maybe it wasn't, but you know, we've had these conversations, and they've been going on in the periphery of Philly sports media. We're still waiting on Mike Missinelli, where he could land. Yeah. He hasn't gone one way or the other. We've been waiting on 97.5 to make the announcement that he's taken over middays with Bob Cooney. There have been the people who have said, hey, it's been a few months. PHLY was in the mix. Where the hell is Mike Missanelli going? He can't possibly just stay on the Bet Rivers podcast feed, right? You were once his producer. You worked with him. Like, you hearing anything about Mikey Miss?
So I have not spoken to Mike about the situation. However, well, first of all, and let me ask you this. Don't you think it's a little weird that nobody's commenting about anything and there's nothing out there and there doesn't seem to be a lot of urgency to fill the spot, right? Like, let's just do a hypothetical and they were interested in Mike and now they're not interested anymore. Aren't they working to bring somebody else in to work with Bob? And I like Bob Cooney a lot. I do. I think he's great. But they're kind of rotating Amy Fadul for an hour or two or for a show, and Bill Colarulo, my buddy, he goes on there with him. I think Bill's great, and I think he'd be awesome to bring in full time. But it just seems like they're waiting to try to get something done with Mike. So I did some checking in the last 2 weeks, Russ, and I was able to confirm with somebody independent to where I'm now comfortable saying it, that Mike and this and 97.5 are still very much interested in each other. And I'm told that the issue at hand isn't the contract as far as money. The issue is what I was told is being called the Gargano clause in the contract, where they want, remember what happened with Anthony? He left, he wanted to do both. They said no. And then they were mad because advertisers were going to go or whatever. Right. So what I was told was they were trying to protect themselves from Mike leaving and taking advertisers with them. Something to that, to where they were trying to make him sign a long-term, hey, you can't bring advertisers with you for a lot longer than anything I've ever heard before. And all the contracts I've done in radio, Russ, I've never signed anything saying that I can't take advertisers with me. They've never asked me to. I've never had to fight it. So,
it seems like a weird I mean, like, I get why with Gargano, why they might have felt, you know, spurned and it was a little bit weird, and there was maybe some talent poaching. There were those accusations in that lawsuit. But, like, the idea that it's one thing to have a no-compete, right? And there are certain no-competes that don't hold up in court because they're far too broad or they're far too long. And I still think that no matter what, does Mike live in PA or does he live in Jersey?
Yeah, he's like mainline area.
Okay, so him living in PA makes it a little bit harder, I guess, than if he lived in Jersey, because Jersey doesn't honor no-competes, allegedly.
Right.
But PA does. So I guess the thing is, you know, could he, in theory, get signed to a deal? And it's there in black and white that he can't take. But, like, say they said, like, Mike can't come on the radio and then take his advertisers for 3 years after he leaves, right? That's absurd. Like, that is right. Well beyond the expectation of what a reasonable contract would say. He theoretically could sign that deal, leave, and then fight that in court. And then it's them against Beasley. Beasley looks at it from macro view and says, like, this isn't worth it. You know, maybe they cut it down to 18 months. So, like, maybe that's worth it. But it's an interesting place that they found themselves, because they, in a way, they did kind of set a weird precedent in settling the Gargano thing the way that they did, because you would think that if you were trying to send this message that this will not be tolerated again, they might have gone a little bit stronger. Including that in, like, future hosts' contracts is just wild to me. Maybe it's just because it's Missanelli. You know, maybe if you wanted to go do business with 97.5 at some point, they would try to get you on the same thing. It's just, for a host, if you've built up enough equity with a sponsor, the idea that, like, you're inherently tied together and then told, like, no, after all these years of you working to build with that brand and work with that brand, you can't take them with you or they can't work with you. Man, that's a weird precedent to set.
Yeah, and you know what? I think you're right. I think this is something they are going to use going forward, doing it. It's weird because, like I said, I'd never heard it. And here's the reality of it. And just to kind of take you inside the radio, Mike, obviously, because he's very talented, he's always produced ratings, he's got a great show. His show sells, right? So their advertisers are interested in going on his shows. But he's not like Anthony, where Anthony literally has a handful or more than a handful of his advertisers that have been with him for a long time. It's a relationship thing. Yeah. So where he goes, they go. I remember Ant coming to the Fanatic to work mornings when I was working with him, and he had a number of his partners that came over with him. believe me, Mike will do well, but Mike doesn't have those same relationships. Mike doesn't have Primo. You know what I mean? Mike doesn't have – his name will get plenty of advertisers, but he doesn't have the same sales-friendly background that Anthony does. So to be honest, I mean, it wouldn't even be a worry for me if I was Beasley in tying that to Mike. Listen, Mike's at the end of his career. I'm not going to throw his age out there. But if you're worried about Mike coming and fulfilling his contract at the Fanatic and then leaving and going somewhere else and taking his advertisers with him, to me, it's a little bit ridiculous. But to your original point, Russ, I think this is something they're going to make people do going forward because they're worried about losing these guys. I don't know.
And it's weird, too, because you always think about, like, how do you monetize your show beyond your contract? Like, where does the value come as a host? You know, like, I know in the podcast space, like there are very easy and simplistic ways to look at it because you're trying to monetize your channel, your video, your podcast feed, all those different things. But like as a host, I don't know how much you want to pull back a curtain here, but like as a host on a radio show, if you go out and you procure your own sponsor, let's use Capriati's instead of Primo's. Let's just go with another sub place or Jersey Mike's. So let's say you go out and you secure a sponsorship because Jersey Mike's wants to sponsor your show on whatever radio station. Do you get a cut of it as a finder's fee? Or is it something that the station just says, well, thanks?
I mean, unless it's working your contract, normally you don't. And maybe you could even on the fly say, hey, I'm bringing this to you. Give me a finder's fee. But for the most part, you're getting whatever your talent fee is. So, for example, you get a certain amount of money per week if you have a recorded spot that's running. You get a certain amount of money per week or per read if you're doing the live commercial, right? Okay. So Anthony with Primo's, Anthony with whatever, Mike with, for a long time, he did West German BMW. I'm not sure who he's been doing a lot of. And with me with Dr. Glatt, right? Like Dr. Glatt spends a lot of money with WIP and Odyssey, a lot of money with him, right? And that was somebody that I brought over to WIP. They weren't advertising at WIP before I brought them over when I came over in 2017, right? So, like, I don't get to tell WIP, hey, they're not allowed to spend money with anymore. They're mine. But I do have the relationships. So the name of the game and everybody that I've worked with in radio, and really this is any job or life, is you learn from other people. So you learn what to do and what not to do sometimes, right? Sometimes learning what not to do is even more important than learning what to do. But the one thing I learned, the biggest thing I learned from Anthony was how important those sales relationships were. And I saw it when he came over here. It's like, man, you know, Fanatic's paying him a lot of money in large part because he comes over and his show's sold out and there's people interested in advertising with him. And he's got his clients that he's bringing with him. So it's important. But I think you guys put Anthony's contract up on the site because somehow Kevin was able to get it off a website. But he had some type of a finder's fee in his contract. Now, I don't know if he ever cashed in on that or whatever, but
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think this is actually one of those times where it's like, it's an interesting thing. If you're a listener, if you're a radio listener, you consume media. And obviously part of the reason that people come to Crossing Broad in the first place is because of radio wars and media stories. Like Kincaid's probably working on Jamie Apodi mystery, employment update number, 73 at this point. But like people like to know how this stuff works. And so, yeah, it's a pretty interesting thing. So thanks for the insight there. Some people call that inside baseball. We just call that.
Well, I mean, honestly, I don't listen twice a week necessarily the entire time, but I'll remember on Thursday, especially because my schedule is a little bit different. I usually hear like the last half hour, 45 minutes, and then I'll go back. So I want to hear what you guys are saying about stuff as well. And the media has always interested me. So whether it's nationally or locally, I'm always interested in what's going on with the media. So it'd be pretty interesting to see how this Mike thing shakes out at 975.
I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, like, what you've got the show with Bet Parks, you're doing your YouTube and such show. Yeah. And I see it pop up on the Instagram live, but like, I mean, I threw out two scenarios a while ago. It wasn't when you were on the show. I said, if I were you, this is me, I'd probably wait for Mike to go to the middays. I'd wait to have a better lead in. And then, if the afternoon show doesn't get fixed, I'd probably come in on, on the white horse or whatever and be ready to save the afternoons. However, you've done the afternoons, our commute, because we live very close together, that commute Whether you're going to Bala Cynwyd or you're going to Center City, sucks ass no matter what. And it is a grind. And I know people are like, oh, you make enough money, it doesn't matter. It's not fun. It's not a great drive. And you get home after your kids go down for bed. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much you're getting paid. So let me ask you, like, that was an option. I said, PHLY could probably use another very talented host. I still think that there are things that they could absolutely improve upon. And I'm shocked they have not done it yet. But, like, any updates on the potential Johnny Marks having another consistent gig kind of thing?
Yeah, I heard you say the Fanatic thing when you said it. There is a, and this isn't even, I'm not even saying they'd be interested in me. I have zero interest in working afternoon drive again. I'm done. I'll work mornings. I would even work middays. I'm done working afternoon drive. For example, last night I did my stuff at Parks. I shot some videos. We did the live show. I drove home. I coached softball, got back from softball, fed the kids, put them to bed or whatever. Like that's what I'm valuing in life right now. And unfortunately, and I know a lot of people are going to be like, wah, but it's like, I got 8, 8, 6, and 2. And I don't want to get home at 7:30 every night. I hate it. First of all, the hours for me, I'm ready to go early. I'm up early. I'm ready to go early. I wait all day to get on the radio. Like half the time I've already done the show 4 times in my head. So yeah. And I'm not telling you that I wouldn't go to the Fanatic, but I have no interest in doing afternoon drive at all. So that's not an option. As far as PHLY, I've been on the show a couple times. I've been on with Anthony a couple times now. I mean, he kind of offered me a job on the air. So I don't think I'm breaking any news here when I say that I think there's some mutual interest, and it's a matter of kind of figuring out what I'm going to do. And I would say that we're in that phase right now of kind of talking and seeing what we can do. But, you know, I've heard your commentary on PHLY. I've read and I've heard what Kyle Scott has said before. I have a lot of questions about it because it's not something that I've ever thought about doing, and it's not something that I ever thought that I'd be doing. I always thought I was going to do radio. I listened to radio growing up. I've always wanted to do radio. I've been doing radio almost for 20 years. I was doing it. And then you realize times are changing and there's an opportunity in something where like, wow, this is not only really interesting and exciting, it's also intimidating. This isn't something that I've done before. And it's not something that I know I could go on the radio right now and do a 4-hour show like this and it'd be good. I don't know if I have to go do a show like Anthony's doing right now. You know, it's difficult. It's challenging. And that's what's exciting to me. So, like, I've been paying attention to a lot of different stuff over the last few weeks, few months, in different cities that have similar digital shows, see what works, see what doesn't. So, you know, I would say I'm preparing myself for this next phase of my career. And it could be a PHLY. I think that'd be a very good match, and I'd be excited to do it.
I think it would be a very smart hire on their part.
Well, thank you.
I will say, I mean, listen, I've been very critical of it because I think that they've, like, genuinely, I think that they've made a few strategic decisions that are just fucking stupid. And I told their CEO that they were questionable at the time when they tried to buy Snow the goalie. And I'm shocked that, like, 7 or however many months later, they haven't fixed him. But there is a roadmap. There is a way to turn that into a legitimate juggernaut. Maybe they will. And if you're there, and you have Gargano, and you go into a football season. Like, I'm critical, but at the same time, I look at it and I say, right now, there's no football. Gargano is particularly good with football, right?
Yeah.
You are particularly good, I think, any time of the year. But there's something different about the juice around the Eagles versus the start of a Philly season, the end of a Sixer season and a Flyer season. So, like, I think that there are ways to fix things. I do think that it would probably be a very smart move on their part, but we'll see. Maybe I shouldn't say that because I have to imagine that the folks at PHLY, some of them may not be happy that I occasionally critique what they're doing. So maybe I should say you would be the shittiest hire, and then they would absolutely do it just to say that Russ Joy is a dumbass.
Well, that's why I wanted to discuss with you because I know that you've been – a critic maybe isn't the exact word that I'd use, but skeptical that it can work. Here's the reality, and this is the only thing I can do and the only thing I can control, and I would say the same thing with PHLY, is just putting out good content, doing good shows, right? Like I said, I'm not an expert in YouTube and repurposing things. And I think you know, PHL White has gotten a ton. I think they've been doing great in the last couple of weeks as far as since Anthony started putting it out. But yeah, like it's the only thing that I can control, whether I'm at a radio station or doing whatever, is the work that I do, the hard work that I put in, and overall what the product is. So doing a good show, and that's really all I want to do because that's all I can control. Like, I don't know. Like, I've heard you talk about retention numbers and this many people tuned in and that many people tuned in. Like, this is still something very foreign to me that I am currently digging my teeth into. So we'll see how it works out, and hopefully I get a chance to jump on PHLY and be a big part of their growing.
There you go. So yeah, we may or may not have sort of quasi broken a little bit of media news here. So now all the aggregators out there and those fine folks know who they are. Make sure that you drop the link to the show when you write it up for your respective outlet.
Who's the number one overall seed for media aggregators? Dove Kleeman?
I don't know. I'd say probably Kevin Kincaid. He does the cop. He does Control C, Control V really well. If you used to read the comments section of the site, Captain Copy Paste. So anyway, I think it's probably a good place for us to wrap. I was going to do a eulogy to the Flyers, but let's be honest. If you want to hear Flyers talk, you go over to Snow the Goalie, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube. And I'll be dropping a pro wrestling podcast this week over on It's Just Wrestling. The links to those are also in the description of the episode. So if you want to go listen to that stuff, it's there. It is available to you. Am I sending you off to another channel potentially, which would drive Kevin Kincaid nuts if you were here? Yes. However, I would just point out to Kevin that it is the end of the show, and now is a perfect time to send people off to go find other things to check out. So, John, thanks for hopping on. Craig, big thank you. The Mr. $400,000 salary man on the ones and twos. I'm Russ. We'll be back on Monday with another episode of Crossing Broadcast. And then next Thursday, Kinker's still out. So we'll see what's going to happen on Thursday's show next week. This show happened at 1:30 live, 1:30 Eastern instead of noon. We'll talk about it next week as well. So for John, for Craig, I'm Russ. Thanks for tuning in to Crossing Broadcast, your number one favorite Philadelphia sports podcast.